Providence for Today welcomes you to the study of God's incomparably precious and never-changing Word. This is Pastor David Simpson on behalf of Providence Church of Powell, Tennessee, and friends of the Gospel of God's Sovereign Grace. We trust God will powerfully and effectually reveal His Word to our hearts and apply it to our lives. The Providence Church place of worship is located at 104 Faust Kearney Road. You'll find us on Clinton Highway, just up from the Claxton Elementary School. When writing, please address mail to P.O. Box 1467, that's 1467, Powell, P-O-W-E-L-L, Tennessee, simply TN, 37849. Our radio broadcasts, Sunday sermons, and other resources are available on our website. Please visit us at www.providenceundergrace. Now that is all one word, providenceundergrace.com. Then you can also listen to additional messages by downloading the Sermon Audio mobile app on your handheld devices or by visiting sermonaudio.com. Then if you'll type in Pastor David Simpson, you'll find your location, and you can find us on Facebook at Providence Church. Of course, your interest and attendance with us in worship on Sundays at 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock is welcomed. I will be bringing a message, the Lord willing, each Sunday morning. We would love to have you visit us. This month, February of 2014, which is just about to pass us by, we have begun our fourth year on WYSH Radio, broadcasting out of Clinton and Knoxville, Tennessee, which are nestled in the foothills of the beautiful Smoky Mountains. By means of the Internet, the broadcast has the potential of reaching folks with the gospel across the globe. To those who listen to our broadcast in other states and countries and continents, your most welcome guest of Providence Church. I continue to be grateful for the support and the prayers of so many. It is my prayer that God will cause His Word to reach His chosen sheep, that He will call each one by His own sovereign grace declared in His gospel. As the Apostle Paul said, wherein the righteousness of God is revealed. Paul referred to God's righteousness and was the theme of his letter to the Romans, which is his orderly presentation of the gospel. Of course, God himself is righteous, meaning his infinite holiness is applied in all of his acts and all of his providences. But righteousness is an attribute or a characteristic of God. That is true. However, that isn't what Paul meant. When he spoke of the righteousness of God, he's talking about the righteous fulfillment of the law and the will of God in every precept and principle from the heart. This righteousness resulted from the work of Christ. The Father accepted it, and the Father imputed or reckoned or accounted it. In behalf of God's elect, Christ kept all the requirements of the law and endured all of its penalties. He obeyed unto death, and when he did, righteousness was fulfilled. No space of time separated the Father, acting as the judge, accepting and imputing the righteousness. The merit of the righteousness was of infinite value. God's elect were immediately, equally, and inclusively justified in His holy eyes. The circle of imputation was no greater than the circle of God's election from before the world's foundation or Christ's death at the cross. That number cannot be added to nor detracted from. It's not the preacher's job to smooth talk over it or around it, nor to avoid this truth, but to declare it simply and plainly. The degree to which it is avoided, to that degree the gospel is marred, yea, my friend, not preached at all. Some speak of Christ's death being efficient for the elect, but sufficient for all. Well, that's just preacher's talk. That's just a preacher's play on words. It's an effort to join two views of Christ's death which are not friends at all. But now in time and experience, he grants repentance and faith by the preaching of this one gospel. Faith is the window by which His elect see their just standing with God. They know what occurred at the cross and altogether outside themselves. They want to hear nothing more and nothing less. My dear friend, this is no small matter. It is at the heart and the core of the gospel message. Yet Paul said men are ignorant of God's righteousness. They were in the first century and they are in the 21st century. In our studies with the encounters of Jesus in John's gospel, we find this theme for our study today. Jesus asked Peter a probing question. Actually, three times the Lord interrogated Simon Peter, with his response following. After this, the Lord gave him his commission, which we will look at next week and probably will bring our study in the Gospel of John to a conclusion. Now, if you have your Bible in hand, if you're able to do that, I know some of you aren't. Some of you are driving. Some of you are on vacation. Some of you are maybe in the hospital and just not able to lay the scriptures before you. But if you are able, I encourage you to take the Bible in hand, look at the last chapter of John's Gospel, chapter 21, and I read to you now verse 15. It says, "So when they had dined, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, love thou me more than these? And he said unto him, Yea, Lord, you know that I love you. He said unto him, Feed my lambs." Now this followed what we read in the earlier verses where Peter and six other disciples, seven in total, disciples had been fishing all night and they had caught nothing. And when they came close to the shore, about the length of a football field from what we can understand, Jesus told them, asked them, had they caught anything, and they said no. He told them to cast their nets on the right side of the boat, and when they did, their nets filled right to the point of breaking. And at that point, Peter realized that it was Jesus. He put on an outer coat, and he dove into the water, and he swam to the shore. And when he came to the shore, this is what followed, this breakfast between Jesus and then the other disciples, because when they came, they found that Jesus already had a coal of fires burning and broiled fish and fresh bread before them. So it's a miracle, without question, of the Lord's provision, and is a picture, if you would listen to last week's study, of the effectual call of grace. So what we see here is after the effectual call of grace is the Lord calling for and putting love in the heart of His people for Himself. So here's what it says. We begin then, and let's look at verse 15. The first phrase said, "So when they had dined," they had breakfast, and what a breakfast it would have been. Imagine the broiled fish, fresh fish, and the soft, fresh, warm bread. Imagine the quiet occasion in which they're sitting and eating. They spoke, no doubt, soberly between themselves of the night's events, holding great wonderment, these disciples, at the presence of the Lord at this occasion. And Jesus didn't interrupt their dining, but He let them become comfortable in body and mind, because He had some vital teaching for them. So notice His method as He makes things comfortable for them, and then He's going to teach them more about Himself and how they relate to Him. It simply says, "Jesus said." I think that what it means is that Jesus turned His face toward Peter in the presence of the other disciples. The six are sitting there, and each one is probably laying back on his left side with his left elbow propped up, holding his head. And Jesus may be in the same position, or maybe sitting before them. I don't think standing, but I think sitting before them. And He turned His face toward Peter. And then He said, or He spoke. And the first thing that came from His mouth, from the mouth of Jesus, was, "Simon, Peter, Simon, son of Jonas. Well, Simon was his given name by his mother and his father. It's a word that means hearing. It might indicate his quick responsiveness in all situations, which Simon, of course, was. But he also called him Simon Peter. This was the name that was given to him by the Lord. The first time we read of this being spoken is in John 1 and 42 at the initial calling of Peter. And he said in John 1, 42, "Thou art Simon, the son of Jonah, and thou shalt be called Cephas," which is by interpretation a stone. Now Cephas is an Aramaic word. So he had the Hebrew language from the Old Testament. You had the Greek language that came from the Greeks, but for the largest part, the actual speaking language of the Jewish people would have been a language that was called Aramaic. And the word Cephas is a word that means stone or a stone, or some say that it means a man of stone or a stone man. So regardless of that, we know that this word Cephas relates to a stone. We also know that Jesus said this to Peter back in Matthew 16, actually forward in progress of time. And in Matthew 16 and beginning in verse 15, Jesus had asked his disciples before, who do men say that I am? And then he said, "But whom say ye that I am?" And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered and said unto him, "Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, or son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this unto you, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say also unto you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church." He called him Simon Bar-Jonah, or Simon son of Jonah, like the prophet Jonah, who is known for being swallowed up by the fish and being effectually and providentially moved to carry God's word to the Gentiles in Nineveh, which Jonah was not prone to do. It wasn't something that he wanted to do, but the Lord moved him to do that. So it's with this great confession that thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God, that he again not only refers to his name upon this earth, but he gives him a more picturesque name, calling him Peter. So it says, "Thou art Peter." Now, the word Peter is, of course, a Greek word, and it is the Greek word Petros. And I say this word to you so you can hear it and understand the difference of another word I'm going to give you in a moment. Again, this word, like the word Cephas in Aramaic, means stone. Furthermore, it must be understood by its comparison to the next reference to rock. There, Jesus used the word Petra. So you have the word Petros, which means stone, and the word Petra, which means a large rock or a cliff or a rock formation. So while Petros means a fragment of the formation, Petra is the formation itself, saying, "Upon this Petra I will build my church." He is saying, "Upon this formation of rock I will build my church." And Jesus referred to himself. This is a vital distinction. You are Petros. You are a piece of the rock. You are a break off of the rock. But I am the rock, the formation. And it's a picture. Paul said it very clearly when he spoke in Ephesians 2 and 20. We are built upon the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. So Jesus Christ is the chief cornerstone, the foundation stone. The apostles are built upon that, and the church is built upon the word that comes through them. That's what is meant. Christ remains the formation stone, while Peter and the rest of the apostles rest upon him, being the one sent to carry the message of the gospel. Then Jesus repeated his name, Simon, and called him son of Jonah. Jesus seems to be emphatic with Peter, calling him by these multiple of names. So then came this question, lovest thou me more than these? So having called his name, and having repeated the name that he is, of course, Peter, the rock, lovest thou me more than these? Two things. First of all, this is a comparative question, more than these. Not more than the fish and the fishing and the boats and the water and the wind, though Peter loved all those things. Do you love me more than all the other disciples? I think Jesus' question is traced back to Peter's words at the end of chapter 13. Jesus had said, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, whither goest thou? And Jesus answered, where I go, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow me afterwards. Peter said unto him, Lord, why cannot I follow thee now? And then he made this bold, bold statement, I will lay down my life for your sake. It's always a dangerous thing when we begin to speak of I and what we will do. Jesus answered unto him with a question, will you lay down your life for my sake? Peter's indication is this. These others may not love you sufficiently, but I love you with all my heart. I love you so much that I will lay down my life for you without question, without hesitation. Mark records that Peter said unto him, although all shall be offended, yet will I not, meaning be offended. Well, of course, we know that that is not true. Another thing that I would point out to you on this very morning is that while the six remained in the boat, Peter exuberantly dived into the Sea of Galilee to be the first to reach the shore. So Jesus asked him this comparative question, do you love me more than these, meaning the rest of these disciples? May I say, friends, it is a fundamental problem for man. That is comparing himself to others. Jesus probed Peter's heart with this question. So not only is it a comparative question, more than these, but this is a soul-searching question. Love thou me? Do you love me as you say you do? My friends, there's more to this question than meets the eye. We find a play on words between Jesus and Peter. I want you to see what I mean. Jesus said, do you love me more than these? The word for love that Jesus used was a noun, and it is agapeo, and it's usually better known by its verb presentation in the original language. It has agape, so it's called agape love. And this love has at least two primary characteristics. This love, first of all, comes from the will. It's a love that is willful and directed. It has the idea of it being an intelligent love. It goes beyond mere feelings or affections. And secondly, this love seeks the best interest of its object. The one who has this love finds joy in another outside himself or herself. This love is sacrificial, therefore. It is supremely found in the love Christ displayed for the church. He sacrificed heaven to come to earth and become a man. Then he sacrificed his life as a man for the redemption of the church. This is the highest of words for love in the Greek language. Agapeo or agape. Love is a word of dignity among men and a divine word from God himself. To use this word to describe one's love was weighty indeed. And so Peter understood this distinction, and the distinction is seen in Peter's answer. So he said unto him, yea, Lord, you know that I love you. Well, the word that he used here, while it doesn't show in our English translation, is not the word agape or agapeo. It's the word phileo. And my friends, the word phileo is a word that is attached to the affections and feelings. So whereas agape love is attached to will and determination, this love is attached to affections and feeling. It is warm affection and the kind of love expressed by a friendly kiss or a warm embrace. It is the love of a friend for a friend. So it's a friendly love or a brotherly love. And in fact, the city Philadelphia is so named the city of love after this word. This love of friendship is well illustrated by David and Jonathan in the book of 1 Samuel. Paul, in effect, asked Peter, "Do you truly love me with all your heart?" For one to be as straight as a gun barrel in his doctrine, yet as empty as a gun barrel in his love, is not bearing the fruit of a true disciple. I'm not even sure it's possible to be both straight and empty. But we see the illustration. Salvation is a loving relationship between the Lord and the heart of his people. So using phileo rather than agapeo, Peter hesitated to use the highest and noblest of words for love. And I don't really blame him. He's showing some needed and fear and humility. Also, Peter didn't respond to the phrase of comparison more than these. Peter wisely let that go by the wayside. So Jesus said unto him, "Feed my lambs." Why did Jesus say lambs? Was Jesus telling Peter, "You're ready to help the weaker ones of the flock, but not the more mature"? Some suggest that, and that perhaps is so. If so, it must have cut deeply in any remaining arrogance of the disciple, given the name Rock. Nevertheless, we are to feed the newborn babes in the gospel, the ones given to Jesus by the Father from before the world's foundation, the ones he bore sin in behalf of on the cross, the ones he earned righteousness for and which the Father imputed to at the cross, the ones the Spirit enlightens in time and experience. Jesus wasn't in fact instructing Peter, "Treat them with gentleness, love, and care. Be sure to nourish, comfort, and strengthen. Carefully declare and explain the gospel. Be an instrument in God's hands and lead them into all truth." Peter learned well, saying in his first epistle, "As newborn babes, desire the sincere miracle of the word, that you may grow thereby." Well, then we move on to verse 16, where we see the second interrogation. He said unto him again the second time, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?" He said unto him, "Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee." Jesus said unto him, "Feed my sheep." Again, Jesus used the word agapeo for God's kind of love. And again, Peter used the word phileo for affection. Two interesting things. First of all, Jesus dropped the comparative "more than these." The phrase of comparison fell out of the conversation. Humility and reality have struck Peter in the heart. The second thing is that Jesus said, "Feed my sheep," instead of "feed my lambs." Why? Well, Jesus was proving Peter. He was trying him, finding him true, his faith being tested and found genuine. So Jesus increased his commission to sheep, not just the weak, but the strong believers. This is an indication of the progress for Peter. They would come from the house of national Israel and from the Gentiles with these sheep, and all of them are to be fed. In verse 17, Jesus said again for the third time, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?" This time Jesus changed himself from agapeo, God's kind of love, to phileo. So you see the play on words. It's affection, brotherly love. Apparently Jesus had taken Peter as far as he could go and was about to press him beyond what he could stand. Peter was grieved, it says, because he said unto him the third time, "Do you love me?" Grieved is a word that means sorrowful or affliction with grief. By this third time, Jesus had probed the innermost part of the heart of Peter. It's all he could take at this time. So he said unto him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said unto him, feed my sheep. The word for know is a word that means know by experience. Peter appealed to Jesus as the Almighty and the Omniscient, saying, you know all things. Peter recognized that Jesus had seen his inside and his out. His heart, mind, and life were an open book before the Lord. It's like what it says in Hebrews 4 and 13. Neither is there any creation that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and open unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. My friends, he knows us in like manner. He loved Peter not because of Peter, but because he determined and set his love upon him. Is it not the same with his people today? Indeed it is. Phileo, not the noblest and the highest of love, but the love of affection and brotherly love. Feed my sheep, Jesus said. We see another play on words. The first time Jesus used the word feed, he used the word that is like feeding as a herdsman over a flock. The second time he used the word for a shepherd or a pastor as a shepherd. But the third time Jesus returned back to this word feed as a herdsman. Each time he spoke in an imperative or a voice of command. And each of these are present tense verbs meaning now and from now on. It is the persistent action of Peter and the apostles to care for God's sheep. Care for the young ones and the older ones. He meant the ones just beginning to walk in the faith and the ones who have great experience in faith. All together and each individually need tending, shepherding, and pastoring. I add to what I said earlier. Peter learned well, saying in his first epistle, the elders which are among you, I exhort him also an elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof not by constraint but willingly, not for filthy lucre but of a ready mind, neither as being lords over God's heritage but being examples unto the flock. And when the chief shepherd, that's Christ, shall appear, we shall receive a crown of glory that fades not away. Now this crown of glory is not a literal crown of glory, but the crown of glory is that he shall appear and he shall receive us into his kingdom. This message is of the Lord Jesus to Peter. He carried him for the rest of his days. For sure he had bumps in the road and lessons to learn, but the Lord patiently and carefully taught the appointed and called apostle. May I say to you like this, Peter had denied Jesus three times. Now Jesus led Peter to affirm his love three times. Another thing, Peter made his denial around a fire on a dark night. Here he made his confession around a fire of coals on a bright morning. We must also learn from the truth of Jesus' words, the only ones to tend, love, and care for God's sheep are those who love him. Many feed themselves. They are wolves who ravage the flock in the shepherd's clothing. The scriptures have much to say of them. We'll not examine it at this time. The Lord willing, next time we will come back to consider the commission that was given to Peter, which will actually lead to his death. And most likely we will complete our study of the 21st chapter in John's Gospel. Your interest and attendance with us, both on the radio broadcast and in worship, of course, is so welcomed. We meet at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings. I am Pastor David Simpson, saying until the next time, may the light of Providence direct all your paths, and may the hand of Providence supply all your needs.